John McAfee is the creator of McAfee antivirus software, a major proponent of cryptocurrency, and is currently running for president under the Libertarian Party from abroad, on the run from the U.S. government. His wild life has been portrayed in such films as Gringo, available on Netflix, about his time in Belize, and he has since reinvented himself as an outspoken defender of internet freedom and individual rights. Here is our conversation. I'm here with John McAfee. Sir, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, you're very welcome.
So you are running as a Libertarian Party presidential candidate. What I first wanted to ask you is, why do you identify as a libertarian?
Well, I mean, I think libertarianism is fundamentally the way that I live. There are only four rules for life that are necessary. We don't need all the laws that we have. The first is harm no one. Number two, tell the truth. Number three, keep your word. And number four, don't take what's not yours. And that's basically all people need. And that's what libertarianism is. Basically that our bodies and our minds belong to ourselves, and what we choose to do with them, what we put in our bodies, what we choose to store in our brains or discover or research, is our business only, as long as it does not interfere with someone else. So they're right up my alley.
You've said before that you don't believe the libertarian candidate could ever win the presidency. In that case, why?
I didn't say ever. Certainly not in my life.
Okay, sure. Perhaps you're referring to like the immediate election. But in any case,
there's no way in the next 10 years a libertarian is going to win a presidential election. Like I can pretty much guarantee that.
Okay, and I think that's probably fair. But in that case, why run?
Well, because I don't think presidents change anything, if you think about it. I mean, you know, Obama's in for 8 years and he creates massive programs which are simply unwound by Trump. Nothing changes. So presidents, when you become a president, you become a puppet with 1,000 strings. So presidents do not change America. The process of choosing a president changes the country, because for a year we get to listen to the ideas, the perspectives, the opinions, the viewpoints of many different people. Well, I have something to say, and I think the national stage has given to me. Hang on a second. No,
you're good.
Okay, and so the national stage. Hang on. My wife wants to say something. Go ahead, say it. Say it. Anyway, I'm sorry. So now.
Oh no, you're totally fine. I mean, she could say something
live?
If she wants it.
And
we're not live. No, I mean, well, I'm recording it.
We're recording. Okay, so that'll be an interesting thing for your listeners. Now. Hang on a second.
I just wanted to add that I think the point of the running now, given the climate and the way people's ideals are, the fact that a Trump got elected in a landslide, I think that people are ready to hear and accept the truth of things, and they're ready for a new message of freedom, of actual freedom from government to government, people telling you what you can and cannot do with your body. And so I think that's the importance of why he's running now.
Yeah, because seriously, I just want to say, I have some things to say, and people are listening.
I think that makes sense. To your wife's point, was that do you feel the same way? Do you feel like Trump running and winning, sort of regardless of what you think of the policies, has opened new doors for different political ideas or campaigns?
Oh, absolutely. I think it demonstrates how fed up. I mean, think about it, please God, how fed up America is with the insanity of our government. I mean, seriously, if you look at what the purpose of government is, as laid out in our Declaration of Independence, it is to serve the people. And we have a democracy. We elect the government. We choose it. Now, does our government serve us? No. It enslaves us. It taxes our income. We have to work for the government for 3 to 4 to 5 months a year. It tells us what we can or cannot put into our bodies. It treats us like children, as wards of the state. But we are the masters. The government is our servant. Who in government acts like a servant? Please, see the truth of this. Our government has gone insane. And American people are simply fed up with the insanity. Hence, Trump. God knows what that is.
On that similar point, because I know right now a question that's being debated is whether or not we'd pull out of Syria. And I know that you have some ideas about foreign intervention. Could you talk a little bit about what you think we should be doing in all these wars in the Middle East and about terrorism in general?
I'll tell you exactly what we should be doing. Nothing. Let me ask you something. Do you even know what the Syrian national language is? Do you?
No.
And probably none of your listeners do. If you did, do you speak it? Do you understand the Syrian culture, religion, political alliances, history, and every other aspect of the culture in great detail?
No.
Nobody does. Why the fuck are we involved? Do you understand our insanity? We're involved because we have the power to do so if we choose. We've got all the guns. End of story. Now, as average Americans, we don't have a clue what's really happening because our information is warped, twisted, and created by the CIA and covert agencies within the government. We don't have a clue what reality is. So we're totally in the dark about what the truth is. And even if we knew the truth, we are incapable of dealing with it rationally because we do not understand. And yet we get involved. Please, God, one thing has to happen first. We have to have a government that tells the truth. We do not need secrets. People say, oh, we need military secrets. There are no secrets anymore. I am the world's premier cybersecurity specialist, if I may toot my own fucking horn. And I promise you, there are no secrets anymore. It's not possible. So if a scientist at Los Alamos Research Center in New Mexico invents some new type of bomb, within 5 seconds, the Russians, the Chinese, and the Japanese certainly know about it. Believe me. And yet we continue to keep secrets. For what? We're only keeping them from the citizens, not from our enemies. Our enemies you can't keep secrets from. So we, as citizens, are in the fucking dark. That has to stop. We need openness and honesty in government.
It does seem like at any given time, we'll hear about 30, 40 years ago what the intelligence agencies were doing abroad, whether it's like coups or intervention, what have you. And then now we don't know what's going on at the present. So you want to get out of Syria then?
Well, I want to do nothing until I understand, number one, what the truth is, because we don't have it. I promise you, we as citizens do not know the truth. If you think we are not being deceived by our government, you simply haven't been paying attention.
During the 2016 presidential cycle, you also ran for the Libertarian Party candidate, and you got second to Gary Johnson. Do you have any new strategies this time?
Totally different strategies this time. The last time I was actually playing the game. Up until the last debate, when someone asked me, Mr. McAfee, what will you do in your first day in presidency? I said, please, God, there won't be a first day of presidency for me, nor of any of us standing on this stage. That's the craziness of the Libertarian Party. We are not going to be elected president. And you realize that there are adults watching this debate who also know we're not going to be president. So please, ask me a rational question. So I played it up until the last. This time, no. I'm not going to be president. I know that. But I am going to tell the fucking truth. Don't ask me questions about the wall, about immigration, because I do not have the answers. Not that I'm not smart enough to get them. It's just I don't have the information. I promise you that whatever our government tells us about important issues, it's told in a manner that is in the interest of the preservation of the government, not in our interest. So we have stopped the nonsense. Go ahead.
So when you say that whoever the Libertarian Party nominee, at least this time around, will not be president, are you still trying to win the nomination, or are you mostly just trying to get your voice out?
In fact, I need to. I will this time, I promise you. I mean, people are already writing it. One of the party leaders wrote a beautiful blog post about, listen, you know, everybody wants someone a little more proper than McAfee, but let's face it, he seems to be the chosen one, given the fact that Weld has now returned to the Republican Party. Who's left? Think about it. So now, I will get the nomination. I need the nomination because I will absolutely, I don't care how many people are going to support the Libertarian Party, but I promise you, I will get into the debates. I will shame the world into getting into the debates. And I need that.
I'm less familiar with Libertarian Party politics. Who is the sort of core? I'm less familiar with the detail. Okay. So, for instance, like what would the core demographic for the Libertarian base be? Like who are you making your pitch to? I mean, obviously the American people in general, but for instance, people might say of Republicans that it's skews more towards older men, and Democrats are young women or something like that. Is there a certain demographic that?
You know, I'm not making a pitch to the Libertarian Party. I think my nomination will be a shoo-in. I'm making a pitch to those people who seem to hear my message and resonate with it. And that's the 18 to 30-year-olds, oddly enough. It blows my mind. And it's not exactly a demographic that I like.
Why is that?
Or don't like. But it's, for example, if you go on my Twitter page, I have an Avi. Half of my Twitter image is an Avi. Why? Because my campaign manager for the millennials said, you have to. So I did. When I did that, I probably got 200 comments going, hey, he's got an Avi. I'm voting for him. That is how shallow that group is. Okay, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know what an Avi is, yes?
It's a... Hello? Is it?
It's an avatar from manga of someone that you resonate with.
I see.
I chose Joseph Joestar.
Why is that?
Well, he's a sort of a ragged character. He's older. You know, he's half good, half bad, like all of us. He just seemed to resonate with me.
Interesting.
Well, to be frankly with you, my manager suggested it. When I looked into it, I go, yeah, that's cool. Exactly me.
Yeah. I had a question. Is there something, speaking of young people, I've noticed that there's hardly a conversation that goes by between a group of young people that does not have some mention of climate change. Do you have, or is there a libertarian response to climate change, or how does that fit into your vision for the country?
Well, here's how I look at this. If you want to talk about climate change, the destruction of species, the impact of humankind on our planet, we get into the area of human arrogance. Do you actually believe that human beings, our species, has the ability to harm this planet without us being wiped out by God knows what? Please, God. You need to read Darwin I think I'm the only man in the world who actually has read every single page of Darwin's Origin of Species. Probably the most profoundly beautiful, mystical, mysterious work I have ever laid eyes on. No, trust me, we do not have the power. We are tiny creatures on a large world, in a larger solar system, in a larger galaxy, in a larger universe. We have no significance whatsoever. And to think that we can both damage and fix, we've tried that before. Every single time we have introduced a new species in order to solve a problem, we have created 100 problems. Every time we attempt to fix something that we believe we broke something else. We're tiny creatures with tiny minds in a massive world with its own conscience. So believe me, sir, I'm not interested in fixing or dealing with climate change. If you look at history, massive, sudden, powerful climate changes happen every 10,000 years, where half the world is covered with ice, and then a few years later, it's all desert. The Sahara Desert itself was a lush forest no later than 8,000 years ago. What do you think that our tiny species has to do with this crap? I believe nothing, sir. Nothing. We are too arrogant for our own good. We are not the gods that we think we are. I promise you that.
Interesting. The reason I bring it up, I mean, because I'm not a scientist, and I'm just going off what I hear other people say. Would you support more solar power or alternative energies, or do you think this is just something that should be left to markets?
Do I support solar power? I support research. I support investigation. I support new technologies. But if you look at the history of human progress, it is the crises that we create that creates real change and real progress. So let's burn up all the fucking oil, and then we'll see some new technologies. And I'm sorry, that's just how humans react and what they do. So we're trying to solve a problem before it's really here. And we don't know what the real problem is going to be. We're anticipating, well, we're going to run out of oil. Well, we haven't yet. And when we do, we're going to need wind and solar and hydroelectric. Between now and then, I guarantee you something is going to happen. Someone's going to invent a carbon tetrachloride battery that lasts forever and produces 1 million volts and 10,000 amps forever for nothing. Yes. This is how the human race progresses in leaps that are unanticipated, unplanned, sudden, and shocking. This is how it works. So, again, I'm all for solar electricity, all for solar power. In fact, in my Colorado property, I had all wind, solar, and hydroelectric. Totally inefficient, massively expensive to install, impossible to maintain at 10,000 feet in the air, which is where I was up there, and yet I had them. But we are anticipating what might happen. Just hang on and see what does happen. It will be different, I promise you. Someone will have a battery that lasts forever and produces all the power in the world. Or something similar.
That's interesting.
No matter what we do, even with, let's say, the energy waves of the ocean, massive, you do understand that every time we use some of that energy, we dampen a wave. So we're sucking up something, the rotation of the Earth, if nothing else. The world is perfect as it is. We need to leave the fucker alone.
One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is cryptocurrency. I know that you're a big proponent of that. Could you talk a little bit about what sorts of possibilities in terms of expanding human freedom cryptocurrency could offer?
Okay. To do that, why don't we talk about markets? Because markets, sure. Markets have been around forever, you know. People having a bunch of chickens and raising a cow and three pigs for 4,000 chickens or whatever, okay? That was the beginning of markets. Markets are very strange things and extraordinarily powerful things. They have developed to the point that currency, the medium of exchange for markets, whatever the market is, market in shoes, the shoelaces, cars, toys, human slavery, I don't care. The currency is the power. Whoever controls the currency is king. Well, who controls the currencies? Governments, the Fed, massively powerful people. Why? Because it is what is necessary for all of us. If I don't have a dollar, how am I going to survive in this world? If I just have sheets of paper written by people I use, how do I rent a house, buy a car, feed my family, clothe my family, eat lunch at a restaurant, put gas in my car, hire a prostitute, whatever. I can't do anything. I am totally bound and immobile without the currency. See the power of the currency. Now, the currency is controlled by whom? The government or somebody. We don't control it as the citizens, as the people. Currency rates can go up, can go down. Interest rates can go up, can go down. The currency supply can wax and wane depending upon the whims and needs of those in power. So we are slaves to currency. End of fucking story. Now, what is cryptocurrency? It's a private currency. I do not need a bank in order to own Bitcoin or to send a wire, the equivalent of a wire. Someone in Japan says, oh, yeah, I'm going to sell you this collection of rare samurai swords for 5 Bitcoin. Send it to me. Well, it takes me 30 seconds. I get my samurai swords. It's my wallet. My wallet is the bank. Do you understand? I don't have to get up, go to the bank, right. Get dressed, go to the bank, fill out a bunch of forms. Wait 2 days, go home. No, I push a button. It is under my control. And with privacy currency like Monero, it is completely invisible to the rest of the world. My monetary, my currency transactions are private and anonymous, visible to no one, not even governments. Now, tell me this does not give me complete control of my life if everybody is accepting this currency. And more people are accepting cryptocurrencies as the currency of exchange. A currency that cannot be controlled by an individual, an organization, a government agency, a bank, a financial institution, or a powerful person. Totally free.
Have you?
Under my control, your control. For the first time in human history, since we stole fire from the gods, we have the ability to have infinite power and infinite freedom for every individual. Please see how important this is.
Of course. I mean, I think the underlying technology of blockchain is going to continue to be important, and I think the cryptocurrencies. The one criticism that people have had, I think the people you mentioned, so like a banker, Jamie Dimon, said that it's basically it's worthless because it's a bubble or something like that. How do you where does the value of, say, Bitcoin come from? Do you think that it's a valid criticism?
what is the value of any currency come from? I mean, it can't come from the paper it's printed on. It's less than a penny. It can't come for what you can redeem it for from the issuer, which is the government, because that's nothing. Used to be you could redeem it for silver, but you can't anymore. So you can't redeem it for anything. The value of the paper is next to nothing. The value comes from its acceptance as the medium of exchange. Please. It is human acceptance. It is a mental process that creates value. Because there is nothing connecting the dollar to gold anymore, nor to silver, nor to anything of any value whatsoever other than the goodwill of the U.S. government. Well, we're what, 20-some trillion dollars in debt? That makes the dollar a negative value. And yet, we're still using it. So all people have to do is understand that, number one, Bitcoin just doesn't get pulled out of the air. It costs thousands of dollars to create one. It's finite in number. 21 million will never be greater. And it will, in fact, be a gold standard in the crypto world. When I say it's going to reach $1 million, that's an obvious thing. Anybody should see this. So value is in the acceptance, you want to call it trust, whatever, of the user base. End of story.
Do you include cryptocurrency? Do you promote that at all in the realm of your politics? For instance,
it's going to be my number one theme. Because really, until we free ourselves as people, there's no sense in trying to address problems of government. I mean, that's crazy. No, we need to be free first. And how are we able to make ourselves free? Well, financial freedom brings all other freedoms. So, yes, it's a major milestone. It's about the only thing I'll be talking about.
Do you believe that we should abolish the Federal Reserve?
Well, I don't think we should worry about it. It's going to go away when the cryptocurrency comes in.
Okay.
Why worry about things which are self-ending? The Federal Reserve is one of those. The Fed will disappear. So will income taxation, and so will large overburdened governments. There will be no way to support them. So these things are self-limiting.
Why do you believe income tax will go away? Because Bitcoin is a private currency?
Okay. Now, there are two schools of thought. Number one, everybody's honest. If you make $1 million, but nobody knows it. And if you're in cryptocurrency with a privacy coin, nobody knows how much money you've made or what is transacted through your wallet. And so the government says, well, people are going to declare it anyway. I made $1 million. This is my taxes. I think that's a very foolish supposition. I think that if people know that nobody knows, including the government, how much they made, they are not going to report their full incomes. And probably very tiny fractions of such, because there is simply no way to audit the entire population of the world.
One of the things I wanted to ask is, I read online that you're currently running for president from international waters. Is that true, or what is that?
Well, I'm no longer in international waters. I think it's obvious now. I have several on the island of Exuma, the Bahamas, in Georgetown, a town of 900 people. The island has 7,000 inhabitants. I've been here maybe 20 times before, one of the most beautiful places on earth. And I have retained a Bahamian lawyer who specializes in extraditions to make sure that I am not extradited. I have contacted my friends within the CIA without feelers. They have all said the same thing. There is not a CIA station on this planet that would agree to kidnap me. Why? They're my first customer, okay? I have done well for the CIA. So I have nothing to worry about. I'm here. I'm in Georgetown, Exuma, Bahamas. outside the long reach of the normal U.S. System of injustice, and I'm running my campaign from here. I'm well known to all of the locals. I'm helping out local businesses, getting involved, and for a while, this is going to be my home.
Yeah, when I first heard that, it sounded like it was a bit sensationalized, but it sounds like you're living a pretty normal life where you're at.
Oh, absolutely. Very normal. The press sensationalizes everything. I mean,
right.
You know, just the fact that the grand jury was convened is sensation for most people.
Yeah, that's, I mean, what has been your experience with the media broadly? Because, I mean, I've...
What, sir?
What has been, when we talk about sensationalism in the media, what has been your experience with the media in general? Because, I mean, I'm sure you're aware that you get written about quite a lot, and a lot of the times the stories sound crazy, but you're also just you've made one of the most widely used antivirus software in the world. You're a promoter of, you know, futuristic currencies. You're running for president. Do you recognize the image that people create or have of you in the media as being
different images? And here's what the media does. Okay, it starts off with a shadow of a fact. For example, beliefs. Okay, that I was wanted for murder. At no point was I ever wanted for murder, charged with murder, or even suspected of murder by the authorities. I was merely a person of interest, right? So were every one of my neighbors. Every one of my neighbors were taken in and questioned. I simply chose not to be taken in because I had a history with the government where we had been at war for about a year. And I was under...
You and the Belize government?
Pardon?
I said, when you said you, okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, the government of Belize, with the government of Belize, over a whole bunch of issues, okay? Mostly over the fact that I had poured millions of dollars into the interior of Belize to the poor villages where children literally do starve still. Arming police, because in Belize, they don't issue guns. You have to buy your own. Well, no one can afford a gun, for heaven's sake. So I put millions. The government came to me and said, sir, you know, you're being taken advantage of. You don't understand our customs, our culture, our scam artists. Give the money to the government. We will distribute it for you. Well, you know what that means. Okay. I give you $40 million, $39 goes in your pocket. So I said, no, I'm really having fun doing what I'm doing. And so for over a year, this tug of war went on until finally, in March of 2012, they came and said, sir, listen, you know, we know we've had our odds and things, but we have an election coming up. If you'll give us $2 million for the election, listen, you do your own thing,
wow,
we'll leave you alone. Okay. I said, no.
They said that? That's
Pardon?
So crazy. I said, that's so crazy that they said that outright. You know, just $2 million and you'll be fine.
Dollars is it, right? Give us that, we'll be fine. I said no. 1 week later to the day, my compound was stormed by 42 armed special forces soldiers reporting to the prime minister, called the Gang Suppression Unit. Basically, it was his hit team. I was subjected to indignities. They destroyed $500,000 worth of my property. And they left. The next day, that same gentleman who wanted the $2 million said, oh, God, Mr. McAfee, we are so sorry. We had bad information. There was rumors that there was a drug lab on the property. I am so sorry. And by the way, Mr. McAfee, have you reconsidered your donation?
Oh, wow.
I just said, get the fuck off my property. And that began the real war. So anyway. Long story.
That's interesting to hear your side of what happened, because I mean, I don't know anything about Belize as a country. So when I just hear it's some country that's a little bit more poor in South America, I figure that it's possible that the government could really be evade a lot of attention, unlike if there was that kind of corruption in the United States. The guy who got killed, apparently poisoned 9 of your dogs or all of your dogs. What was that like when you...
I don't think he did. I think the government poisoned my dogs.
Really?
I think the government killed that gentleman.
Okay, so you think it was probably... It was something
that's
just set up.
Believe, but that...
Yeah. As in, do you think it was... they did it in an attempt to frame you?
Well, in an attempt to get me in... to get me into a police station for questioning. Because once they do that, in Belize, they can legally hold you for 60 days. Renewable an infinite number of times forever.
Wow.
Meaning, once you get in for questioning, they can legally hold you forever in prison. So I wasn't about to submit to that. End of story.
The craziest part of that story is when you were in Guatemala after you left Belize, and your lawyer told you that he was going to file an appeal by 3 p.m., and you realized that they could extradite you up until that time, so you decided to fake a heart attack so that you couldn't be...
It was more plain than that. He had come into my cell. This was my second day, my first morning in the Guatemalan jail with a judge, actually a young blonde girl. But she only had the power to issue a stay, meaning an issue that I could not be deported. I could not be sent back to Belize up until noon. That's all the powers that she had. He could not file his brief until 3 p.m. There was a three-hour lag. So he came to my cell and said, would you like instructions? And I go, no, sir, I think I've got this. I understand. He said, are you sure? I said, yes, I've got this. Because I didn't want to tell him what I was going to do. So at 10 minutes till noon, I fell over on my face in the cell, busted my nose, whatever, and went into convulsions. They rushed me to the hospital. The soldiers came to the hospital to take me to the fucking border. The doctor said, absolutely not, he's on long care. At 3 p.m. or just after, I was conscious. I feel much better now. I want to go back to my cell. That was all that story was about.
Oh, man. At what point did you decide to fake the heart attack? Was that an option you had in the back of your mind? Or did that just occur to you in the moment?
Well, as soon as he said, there was a three-hour period. Well, you know, I figured I knew where I was. I'm in Guatemala. They do have an actual legal system that, you know, you cannot just rip someone out of the hospital. I mean, it was an obvious choice. I don't know what my lawyer had in mind. He was going to advise me, but I didn't want anybody else involved, right? I said, no, I've got
it. What?
Afterwards, he came to me. Now, this is Celestino Guerra. He was the ex-attorney general for the country of Guatemala. Very famous lawyer. Lots of American clients. He came in and said, I have never had an American client quite like you, Mr. McAfee. I go, well,
yeah.
Okay, good.
What, that just makes me so curious, like, because people have said, John McAfee, the most interesting man in the world. What were you like as a kid? I mean, were you this, did your life have this much of an operatic quality to it?
I wouldn't say operatic. I mean, I was an entrepreneur as a kid. When I was 12, I had every paper route in the town of Salem, Virginia, and I had them subcontracted out to other kids. By the time I was 16, I had $100,000 in the bank, you know, from mowing yards and shoveling snow and running paper routes and you know, buying and selling bicycles and inflatable boats and whatever. It's what appealed to me. I liked money, right?
Right.
So my life was pure business, starting at the age of 7, and it's been pure business ever since. And business is a very colorful world. Maybe that's why.
Was that what attracted you to business?
Money?
No, the fact that it's a colorful world.
Not just that. Pardon?
The fact that, as you said, it's a colorful world.
Well, yes. And really, everybody's in business. It's just if you work for someone else, you may not notice it, right? Because you get a salary. You don't see the day-to-day battle. But really, to me, it was like a game of chess. Business is a game of chess. You know, you have competitors, which you have to watch out for, try to remove if you can. You have customers, which you have to please at all costs. You have suppliers, which are parasites that you have to deal with to keep from being raped constantly, and on and on. So, yeah, it's war. It's constant, nonstop war. I guess that did affect me.
McAfee antivirus became the most dominant antivirus software. How did that come about? As in, I know you wrote the software, but how did you make that so it became number one?
I designed it. Obviously, I did.
Okay.
Way too big. But I designed it, yes. I just hired coders to code it.
Gotcha.
How did it dominate? Oh, because I was competing in business since I was 7 years old. It was trivial to me. At that time, everybody was packaging up software with things called dongles, things you plugged into a serial port so that the software would not run unless it was plugged in. Why? People were stealing software. It's so easy to copy it. So I came at it totally different. When my program ran, it said, please steal this software. It was it. Please steal the software. I charged nothing to anybody. Why did I do that? Because I knew by making it simple and easy to steal, everybody would use it. And if everybody used it, when a business said, what software should we use for antivirus, you're going to choose the one that you use. I had 87% of the world market, and my competitors were IBM, Checkpoint, Microsoft, and Norton. But I had the market. I took a different tack.
I heard you say one time that now you believe McAfee antivirus is the worst software on the planet or something like that.
I think all antivirus software is dead. Number one, no antivirus software works anymore. I'm telling you this as a secret because your antivirus company will not tell you. It can't work. It does not work. It's nonsense. It stopped working over 10 years ago. The technology of hacking has evolved so far that all you're doing is chewing up computing power, wasting your resources by running antivirus software.
Interesting. Okay, so I guess I won't get McAfee antivirus then. Or any antivirus.
Hey, Janice. Can I have a Coca-Cola or Ricky? I don't want a Coke with ice. A Coke with ice, thank you. Sorry. I'm sitting out on the back of the boat in perfect weather. And I don't want to go in yet.
How do you plan on joining the debates if you're in the Bahamas or somewhere outside of the mainland U.S.?
With my phone.
Okay.
We have over 4,000 volunteers. People who will wear a mask of me and plug a small speaker into your smartphone and show up at debates. I will be able to see the audience. Speak through this little speaker into the microphone, and it'll be just like I'm there. Now, will they let me? I believe in libertarian debates. They will, absolutely. The rest, it remains to be seen. Doesn't matter how much noise I make. The first Clone Act is going to be in a couple of weeks on the lawn of the IRS, when one of my clones is going to show up and speak, bring a loudspeaker, and for 20 minutes I'm going to talk to the IRS through one of my clones. So, will it work? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how many people buy. Already I've signed my clones up for keynote speeches. For example, the blockchain cruise, this third annual blockchain cruise, they have accepted my clone as me.
Wow. That's I think it'll definitely make a splash. I mean, it'll probably seem so unusual that people will have to talk about it, right? I guess that's the idea.
Absolutely.
I don't want to take up too much your time. Is there anything else? I mean, I think we covered basically why you're running, what you feel are the Libertarian Party values. We touched on your time in Belize. You also had a lab assistant who accused you of drugging her. Does that ever come up, or do you have a response to? Hello? I said you have a.
Go on my YouTube channel. There are children that have claimed that she has molested them on camera. But the woman was stark raving mad. I'm sorry, I fired her because she was stark raving mad. She simply pissed off because she was fired. That's my response. But don't accept what I say. Go on my YouTube channel. There are 25 videos from people throughout that entire movie, all of whom were paid to lie, and they've said it on camera. So that's Nanette Burstein, you know. That's her challenge is creating. Pardon?
What is your YouTube channel? Just John McAfee?
Well, I know. I guess it's John McAfee.
Okay. So you're saying that, because, I mean, there was a whole documentary about you, that there were 25 people in that documentary.
Well, watch those videos. The first one from Cassius, my caretaker, the guy who claimed that I gave him a check for $5,000 to kill a hitman. He finally came clean. In fact, there was headlines in the Belizean newspaper, Money for Lies, new documentary about John McAfee, headlines. So he comes in and says, listen, it's all false. They paid me $25,000 to create this story, the story that Nanette wanted me to tell. And I told him. And I'm sorry, John Mackey. I'm so sorry. I needed the fucking money. Well, I don't blame anybody.
Yeah, that's...
I'm going to move on from here.
Yeah.
Every single actor in that movie later recanted on camera and said they were all paid to tell these lies.
That's
why? You'll have to ask Jeff why.
Yeah.
He has a personal vendetta. He's a co-producer. So.
Oh, I see. Who is Jeff?
Hmm?
Jeff is a co-producer of the movie?
A gringo.
Okay. He has a personal vendetta?
Jeff Wise has made a career. He's a writer. In the past 7 years, he's written... I think 23 articles, 19 of them are all about me, and those 19 are all devastatingly negative.
Yeah.
And the movie, of course.
Right.
And listen, there is no such thing as bad publicity. I mean, that movie did me far more good than any harm it could have done me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I've never seen that movie, by the way.
That's interesting that you say that the concept of, you know, no such thing as bad publicity. Do you feel like one of the ways that that Trump was probably pretty successful was that he sort of really embraced that concept? Do you feel like that could be a possible strategy in your own candidacy?
Well, P.T. Barnum first voiced that truism. And it is true. As long as they spell your name right, I don't care if they write a story about you eating babies alive on the streets of Cincinnati. A year later, that press is going to be really good for you. I promise you. So it's how people react to bad press that's the problem. When I get bad press, I just shrug it off. Someone tells lies, I just smile or make jokes. Because I know for a fact who I am. I don't give a shit what the press says or what people think. Why should I? And a year later, trust me, my popularity is doubled. I don't know how it works, but it just is true. My popularity is doubled. People like me more. I have more followers. People listen to more of what I say. Oh, no. Bad publicity, good publicity, there is absolutely no difference between them.
That's a very interesting and powerful concept, and I think it's a good note to end on. John McAfee, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, and best of luck in the primaries.
Thank you very much.
Wow. A lot going on there. Thank you to John McAfee, and thank you for listening to Dunk Tank. See you next time.